Exhale and meditate. Watch your breath. We're going to do a different kind of meditation, Qigong. Qigong means problem-solving meditation. It's one of the three traditional forms of meditation. What we've been doing is Jogam, which is trying to keep the mind on a single object. And this time we'll do a Qigong, which is... The biggest challenge in your life, think of the biggest challenge in your life, maybe the person that you have the most trouble with, or the events that you have the most trouble with. Try to identify the biggest challenge in your life right now. Focus on that challenge of friend. Try to find the gacha that you've been dealing with. Try to locate in the biggest challenge in your life a part of it which doesn't come from you. Or at least what you've been thinking doesn't come from you. It should be the most upsetting part of the challenge. Focus upon the most upsetting part of the challenge and try to grasp how you've been gacha-ing it, how you've been imagining that it doesn't come from you and from how you've been acting. examine what it is about that object that might be coming from you. Try to imagine something similar that you've been doing in the last few months that might be causing that challenge. Then try to think about how you might improve things. Like how could we do less of the thing that's causing the challenge in the next few weeks or so? Okay, then come back to this room. And slowly open your eyes. Oh, this is a very good question. We're in China, you know, we're in mainland China, and the events there are, honestly, they're reported by the American press a little bit negatively, very consistently negatively. But whatever, there definitely has been a different culture, a protected culture, has grown there for the last 50 years. So they've been isolated in bad ways, but also in good ways. And they're very, very sharp. Their minds are very, very clear. They don't have a lot of the distractions that we have. So the questions there were just totally, totally awesome. They're questions that my oldest students haven't gotten to yet in the first day. You know. So anyway, this is similar. If the only way to get a donut or pen is to give a donut or pen, how could we ever get one to give? When we talk of a creator God, we say that he can't exist because someone would have had to make him. Same thing with donut. Okay, so you can't have a image of a donut in your mind unless you've given one before, but you couldn't have given one unless you had an image of a donut in your mind. Okay? That's one of the reasons why in this system, we say there's no beginning. Okay? And if someone asked us which came first, the chicken or the egg, we'd say yes. Okay, so we say it's illogical to say there was a chicken first or an egg first, because you can't have a chicken without an egg, and you can't have an egg without a chicken. So we say it's an, that in itself is a proof that things had no beginning. And then, but you must distinguish that from not having a cause. Okay? You have to learn to, it's like milk and water, okay? You have to distinguish not having had a beginning from not having had a cause. Because in the West, in Western thinking, we equate them, you see? We say if it didn't have a beginning, it didn't have a cause. You see? And the first monk I ever said that to, he just looked at me quizzically, you know, and he was like, what the heck are you talking about, you know? If it does have a beginning, it doesn't have a cause. If there's a beginning ex nihilo, ex nihilo, with it from nothing, then there's no cause. You know, you and your Big Bang stuff, you know, they're like, that's no cause. You know, something that came from nothing, you know, it doesn't exist. You know? Therefore, the universe has to be beginningless. You know, and we have a misperception that to have a cause, it must have a beginning. But rather, what it is that if it had a beginning without a cause before that, well, then it would be illogical. That's not possible. So you've always had images of donuts in your mind. And you've always had images of pens in your mind. Because you always had one before that to give. But then, this person was anticipating my answer. Well, then how can something new come into being? Or happen, like enlightenment, for example. And there's a discussion of this in the Abhidhamma Kosha, when they discuss Tonglong, which is when you see emptiness directly for the first time. So if you've never had, in countless lifetimes, a direct perception of emptiness, which is why you're here, in a suffering room, then how could you ever have a direct perception of emptiness? Because that's a mental image that you've never had before. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you my answer. Well, I think even in scripture they would say you haven't yet encountered the causes that would produce that image. But that image cannot... That image is not only produced by another image of the same kind. That image can be produced through education or the instruction of a teacher, which I would call the new rearrangement of existing stuff. Okay? The new rearrangement of existing stuff, which would disprove the argument that everyone's been your mother. But anyway, we won't worry about that. So there's another argument, you know, that everyone's been your mother because you've lived countless lives. So they must have been your mother countless times. But then the same people in the same scripture will say, you've never seen emptiness directly, right? Even though you've had countless chances to do so. So that's a little bit of a paradox. I would say, when you do see emptiness directly, for the first time, it's because of two factors. The instruction of your teacher in a way that you've never had before, even though your lives were countless, right? In theory, you could throw dice countless times and not get both snake eyes. In theory, it's possible. So we're the last people in the world that didn't get snake eyes, okay? Like, we here. You know, if you're not enlightened yet, we're like, what percentage are we of the beings in the universe who have gotten enlightened? You know, it's maybe we are just an infinitely small percentage left. Okay, something like that, and that you can rearrange existing images in a new way and come up with a new image. Okay, all right, that's my idea. But it's a really good question. Okay, that's a good question. These are all really nice questions. Maybe we should save them and write them down. If single-pointed concentration is a food for the being, then I can find it in many ways. Dancing, cooking, walking, singing, in any of the activities of life. Being a master in music or alpinism is also mastering the single focus of the mind. Is that less powerful than meditation, and why? Okay? I like to tell this story. Ken Rinpoche liked to watch baseball, you know, and I would come home after, he discovered baseball, I mean, they don't have it in Lhasa, and he really, really liked it. First he watched golf for a long time, and I was like, Rinpoche, it's so boring, you know, and then he got onto baseball, which is a little bit better. But I remember one day, I think it was Dale Strawberry, from the New York Mets, right? And he was up to bat. He was a big home run hitter, you know. And in fact, there's a long story about how Rinpoche rigged the World Series, but I won't tell you. But if you ever wondered why the team that had the worst record in the history of baseball won the World Series the next year, anyway, so Dale Strawberry's up there. He's a lefty, I think. But he's up to bat, and then the pitcher throws the ball, and he hits a home run. And then after the game, they have the post-game show, and they show that swing about 48 times, and they just talk. And it's true. And they don't say anything new, you know. But they talk and talk and talk, and then you see the image over and over of that pitch and that hit. And then they interview Dale Strawberry, and they say, you know, how come you hit so many home runs all the time? You know, because the ball's coming at you 100 miles an hour. And he said, the ball starts at 100 miles an hour, and it's the size of a baseball. But by the time it gets to the plate, to me, it's the size of a watermelon, you know? It's this big. And to hit it is like, duh, you know? It's like, you know, he said, I don't know what it is, but by the time the ball traveling at 100 miles an hour reaches me, it's as big as a watermelon. And I just blindly take a swing at it, and I hit a home run. And then they went back to the, you know, and then they replay the pitch, and they replay him. And then Rinpoche says, watch. He's like grabbing me by the shoulders. And he's like, watch this, you know. And I'm watching. And as the ball approaches the plate at 100 miles an hour in slow-mo, Daryl Strawberry's eyes go like this. They start to widen and widen and widen and widen and widen and widen. And it seems like what's the black part? You can't hear me. Anyway, the black part expands somehow. Like his eyes actually expand. And then he swings, you know. And Rinpoche says, that's ekagra. He has single-pointed concentration. That's what it looks like. He was all excited. He wanted to show me, you know. Which recalls Dr. Yeshe Thunden, who was giving talks about Tibetan medicine. He's the Dalai Lama's doctor, right? So I was translating for him 100 years ago at Nancy Karen's house. And he kept mentioning this thing called guya. And I said, what's guya? And he said, it's a quality of the urine. When you shake it with a chopstick, you know, when you stir it with a chopstick fast, it's a quality of the urine. And I'm like, how am I supposed to translate that? What's it like? He says, well, I can't tell you. You have to see it, you know. So then one day he went to this really, really wealthy lady's apartment. And this billionaire lady, and I had to translate, and she was telling him her problems. And then she went into the, he said, well, you have to pee for me. So she went into the toilet, and then he went into the toilet afterwards, and he took his chopsticks, and then he goes, mine, come in here. This is great. She's got Guya, you know. And you can see Guya, you know. Just look at this lady's pee, you know. And she's getting all red. And so it's the same with Ken Rinpoche. He's like, look, that's Tingen Zin. You know, you want to know what Tingen Zin is? It's that. And he was so excited to see it in a baseball player. But then he went off on this thing like, but baseballs aren't virtuous objects. You see? There's no sacred content necessarily, I mean, often, in a baseball. Okay? Like, it's not like the baseballs, if you concentrate on it carefully, it's going to have any content in it which enlightens you. You see what I mean? Or which changes your heart. You know, and that's why in selecting a meditation object, the classical works are very adamant that you should pick something significant that will, when you open the core of your mind to it, which is what you do in meditation, you are allowing that thing to go to the, actually it's here, Mishigbe Tigle. You are exposing the core of your being to that thing. That's the most powerful place in the world to make seeds, you see? If in deep meditation, you are close to the core of the reactor. You are close to the storehouse where the seeds are kept. It can be held on the tip of a pin. And it has trillions upon trillions of events, future events coming to you. There, the seeds are there. In almost a place with no space. And then when you're in meditation, you're exposing that place to the object. So then the object is going to have a profound, make a profound imprint on your mind and create profound seeds. So they're very careful in meditation texts to say, don't expose your indestructible drop, right? The core of your storehouse. Don't expose it to something which is not significant spiritually. See what I mean? You can expose it to a 100-mile-an-hour baseball, but it's probably just going to create a lot of baseballs later or something. You see what I mean? And then the classical images to expose it to are your lama, your lama's form, or your own heart teacher. By the way, it doesn't have to be a Tibetan. It doesn't have to be a monk or a nun. It could be your mother. It could be your dog. What's his name? He swears it's his dog. The yoga hip-hop singer. MC Yogi swears it's his dog. His root lama. We talked about it. You know, it could be your child. It could be someone, your grandmother who passed away when you were six. It could be someone you haven't met yet. Okay. But in that case, you just picture the most holy thing you can. And then that's like exposed to the very core of your karmic seeds. And it produces tremendous seeds. Okay. So or emptiness, or compassion, or love. You see, you expose your mind to those things. Okay? So it is true, the person who asked the question, they said, can you develop single point of concentration on other things? Yeah, you can, and you do. Great musicians all have single point of concentration on their instrument or their music. But in the selection of a meditation object, your concerns are, can you get ngar for it? Is it going to be something compelling for you personally? And then secondly, is it significant in saving the world? Will it really help to save the world? Okay. So you got to find something which is sexy and will save the world. Okay. Which is your heart teacher. All right. I'll do one more and then we'll try to figure out where the monk is up there. I have watched a lot of TV. I have taken drugs in my life. I no longer do. So I have dullness in my meditation. I'm not surprised. What can I do to explode that karma? When I have dullness, I feel defeated, as though there is nothing. I can do because of my laziness and purposeful dulling behavior of the past. I would like to smash through it. You have to use the four powers, right? So you have an old karmic seed in your mind. And we all had them because we were all teenagers. right? So you know, there's an art in Buddhism of how to destroy old karma seed. Problem being, when you come to a teaching like this and then you get inspired and you start collecting new good seeds, there's this paradox that I like to compare it to planes in line at an airport. And it's first in, first out, okay? We say that in business. It means like the first income in will go out the first in expenses, you know? So with karma, normally, given equal circumstances, a karma which you commit earlier will ripen earlier, right? So, you know, now you've seen the light and you're only going to do good things. And you've got all those old airplanes in front of the new ones, which has a special problem about that. They have to take off first. So that will delay the later flight, okay? And if it delays the later flights too long, you will not be able to draw a connection between your new goodness and the goodness which comes to you 2.5 years from now. You see what I mean? It's too long away for you to draw a surefire connection and be inspired to be good, you see? So it's a very, very bad state of affairs. You come to a talk, you get all inspired, you do all these good things, and then nothing happens for 2.5 years because you got older flights waiting. Okay? And then you don't believe what you heard because you tried it and nothing happened for 2.5 years. And by the time 2.5 years has gone by, you forget the good things you did to make it happen, right? You cannot draw a connection between the stuff that happened, the new good stuff, and the lecture you went to, right? So it's extremely crucial for us, especially when we're first doing our, what do you call it? We're doing our experiments to confirm whether this stuff works or not, right? Like you go out of here and you give away a lot of money and you're waiting for a check in the mail, you know? And then nothing happens. So for those of us who are still trying to confirm whether this stuff is viable or true, feasible, then we really have to, I like to call it cancel the flights. We have to, is there a way to cancel these 5 flights so that our new good inspired seeds will take off? And then most important, it's not just that you get 5 good things, it's that you confirm that the idea works. And that's important. That's the most important thing. So it's really important to cancel the earlier flights somehow. In this person's example, they're talking about canceling seeds of dullness planted by television and the use of drugs, which is true, okay? So then you have to study the traditional Buddhist methods for removing old bad seeds, canceling these flights that are in front. The crux of those methods is to make a decision, okay? But there's a better word, a resolution, that you won't do those things again, okay? And so if you want to know how to destroy an existing karmic seed that you planted in your younger days by smoking dope while you watched the Smothers Brothers and whatever it was. the way to destroy, like it's an interesting question, you know. How many seeds you have in your indestructible jar? Trillions upon trillions, uncountable trillions in your... How are you going to get to the Smothers Brothers team? You know, how are you going to isolate one single seed out of billions upon billions and destroy that one without like destroying all the good ones that's sitting around it? I don't know. You know, it's like a cruise missile thing. Did you see the films of, you know, they go hundreds of miles and then they like go into somebody's, the left side of somebody's window or something, you know, and That's what you want. That's what you're trying to do. So the way to shoot a karmic cruise missile to an existing karma in your consciousness, stored in your consciousness, is to consciously make a resolution not to do that thing for a specific period of time. Okay? So you can say, for example, I won't watch TV for the rest of January. You know, it's a New Year's resolution. That in itself is not a big deal. Okay? But you have to consciously dedicate that month's non-TV to the old TV seed you have. And then the dedication of that seed is what directs it to the previous seed and destroys the flight. Okay, got it? So two things are necessary. Make a resolution that you will not do that thing again for a certain period of time. And then secondly, consciously dedicate it to destroying an old karmic seed which you know you have. Okay, and that's the essence of the four powers. Okay. And it will destroy them. You can use that for anything. And again, there's this added urgency, because if you don't do it soon, you can't confirm that this stuff works. Because you'll be confused by the time delay caused by the previously scheduled flights. All right. Okay, we'll do these later. Maybe you should have a place for old ones, right? Because they're kind of good. You should type them down. All right, let's do a little bit of meditation posting. Or how about we just meditate? Okay, all right. Watch your breath. It's the only thing in the world. Go to the golden room. Enjoy the late afternoon, just before dusk, the golden sunlight pouring into the window. Look at the blue sky overhead to the window. Beautiful, endless blue sky. Try to feel some love for the sky. Try to enjoy the sky, the beauty of the sky. Drop your gaze to the mountains, sitting across a broad valley. Also bathed in the light of the setting sun. Come into the golden room and ask your Lama, beg your Lama to come sit with you, in front of you. I'd like you to concentrate on something new, which is a very, very subtle fragrance coming from their body. Like if you've ever smelled a lotus flower, the fragrance is very, very faint and very, very unique. Try to meditate on a fragrance. Again, try to get in touch with your sheshin. Try to detect the part of your mind which is watching to see if you've lost the object or if the object is, sorry, if your mental state is getting dull. Or if maybe there's no law. Try to meet this watchdog mind. Now try to isolate the part of your mind, Chemba, which brings your mind back to the object after Shaishin rings the alarm. In my mind, it's much faster. It's almost instantaneous. So try to catch it in slow-mo. The part of your mind which is drawing the mind back to the object. Now try to raise a state of nara about that fragrance, like a state of being totally engrossed in that fragrance, the beauty of that fragrance, to the exclusion of all other things. Stay on the fragrance. Be content with the fragrance. Don't seek to go elsewhere. It's enough. Come back to the fragrance. Feel nara for the fragrance. Feel what a relief it is to just concentrate on a single thing. And slowly come back to this room. Slowly open your eyes. We'll just do a little bit of the poster, okay? it feels like we missed something if we didn't do a little closer. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, say, Chingwa, no, you can't say. Okay, I'll say it for you. Chingwa Chamo, which means subtle dullness, and Gopa Chamo, which means subtle agitation or subtly going off to something you like. Okay. Gross dullness would feel like fighting to stay awake. Okay? Alright? That would be gross dullness. Overcome by languor or just feeling heavy. Heaviness of body as well. Heavy in your body. Your body doesn't sit up straight. You feel heavy in the physically. And then mentally, you just feel like drowsy, or you could fall asleep, or something like that. That's gross dullness, all right? Then subtle dullness we talked about, but I think we better talk, let's talk about it some more. Subtle dullness, I think you could just say a lack of lar, okay? And it's supposed to be the greatest problem of meditation that exists. Being on the object, having fixation on the object, you haven't lost the object, even having selcha, the mind is fresh. The mind is fairly fresh. The mind is not dull. The mind is fairly fresh, and you're fixed on the object. But there's no... there's no ngar, okay? There's no intensity. You're not like deep in the object and you're not feeling some kind of a gross, what do you call it? Pleasure in the object, okay? Like that. You don't have that. That's subtle dullness. And that's supposed to be the most dangerous mistake in meditation of all. Why? Because it feels like you're on the, it feels like meditation. You are on the object, you're fairly perky, and it feels pretty good. It feels good, okay? It feels fairly good. But there's not this deep sense of contentment or interest or engagement in the object, okay? Why I keep saying contentment is, I think it's sort of the nature of contentment that you don't need to move on to something else, you know? Like ADD and contentment are like opposite poles. All right, and ADD wants to go on to something else right away. There's something more important. Someone else has sent me an email. I didn't, you know. It's restless. You could call it restlessness. And then to me, contentment is the opposite. Contentment implies that you are happy to stay, sit for a moment with that person or with that meal or with that book. And you don't need to go anywhere, and you don't feel any great need to go anywhere. You're just contented. And that's ekagra, because you don't want to move on to a second object. You're just on a single object. So I like contentment. I like to call it the contentment, really. So the opposite of subtle dullness is the feeling of contentment. But we didn't talk much about subtle agitation, okay, which is considered less of a danger, because it's much less frequent, okay? And that's, I think up here somewhere, I think they said here, opposite 17, between 17 and 19, the monkey is, see, the monkey's almost pretty much white before the monk, before the elephant gets there. I think they made some point up here that subtle agitation, right? It was easier to remove. And that's why the little monkey is getting more wider faster than the elephant. Okay? Because subtle agitation, relatively easier to deal with. Right? And less frequent than subtle dullness. Mm-hmm. Then I like how they describe subtle agitation in the scriptures. They say it's like a stream that has frozen over, and then water is flowing under the ice. They call the word for subtle agitation is water under the ice. Okay, stream water under the ice. And what that means is, and I mentioned it in Phoenix when we talked about it. There's a very beautiful word in Tibetan that you should learn if you're learning Tibetan. It's a difficult word, and it's just simply khad, kh. It's probably related to a word for cracks, khepa. But kh means just about to happen. So like, junkhe means it's just about to happen. Drokhe means on the verge, it means on the verge of going. So you should learn that word, khe. Why is it important in the study of subtle agitation? A thought about something you'd like to do is just about to happen. Okay? Okay, you got to try to get what that feels like deep in a meditation. Your mind would like to have a thought about lunch in about 3 seconds. And you feel it under the ice. You see, the mind is headed towards a thought about lunch. And it's going to pop out from under the ice. Okay? And then subtle agitation means you're on the kit. You're on the verge of having a thought about lunch. And you got to be fast enough to catch it and stop it ahead of time. It's really cool, right? Like you proactively prevent a thought about lunch 3 seconds before it was going to come out. And that's blocking subtle agitation. So that gets pretty cool. You sense a thought coming and you block it. Okay. You sense a thought about lunch coming and you block it. So I think we're on to level 6, which is right here, okay? It's 22. And it's called Shiva Chipa, okay? Shiva in Tibetan means shanti. It means peace, okay? Shiva Chipa means to quiet the mind, okay? To quiet the mind. I don't know if you remember, but in the last one, which was at 21, the dude was having subtle dullness, and he sang tupad to get his mind out of the subtle dullness. Yeah, he uplifted his mind. It can be any kind of inspiring or thing, you know? It can be any inspiring thing. You can even do it with a sex thought, okay? And if your mind is in subtle dullness and you just can't get out of it, then think of some sexy guy. And it will go whoop. And then go to a meaningful object, okay? But you can uplift the mind with almost anything. Just something very interesting to you, intriguing to you. Start with virtuous things. If it doesn't work, you can try with other things, okay? But I've tried it. It works, okay? So you can bring your mind up. Then we've been talking about the driving the car metaphor, right? And what's going to happen when you bring the guy up, you know? It's going to go overboard. It's like a pendulum thing. It's always like a pendulum, you know? You get subtle dullness, so you think of some guy, and then the pendulum swings back, and then it goes too far, and then you have to grab it and bring it back again with a different kind of thought. So at number 22, at the sixth level, there is a subtle, the danger of subtle agitation, which was triggered by over-sang-tupang. Okay. Over-sang, over-uplifting the mind by this point is extremely subtle. Okay. Like, you should have thought about, you should have thought about how lucky you are for about 6 seconds, and you thought about it for 8 seconds. Okay, we're talking subtle here. And then it took you over into, you know, I really am the best person in the room. You know, and then you went a little too far. And that became subtle agitation. All right? Okay. But, and here I'm giving you something for your homework assignment, right? The danger and the, what do you call it? Duration. The danger and the duration of subtle agitation at 22 is less than at 21, and that's partly why 22 is divided from 21, okay? Controlling the mind, at controlling the mind, the danger and duration of subtle dullness, sorry, of subtle agitation is less than it is at the next, sorry. At 22, the danger and duration of subtle agitation is less than at 21, okay? And that's what distinguishes them. And that's why they split them into two. Okay? By the end of step 22, your Sheshin Dzogpa, okay? Sheshin Dzogpa, which means the power of your capacity to catch your mind making an error in meditation is fully developed, okay? It's fully developed. Your capacity to catch yourself wandering in your meditation somehow, right? Having dukkha, having agitation, having dullness, or having subtle dullness, or having nongar. By the time you get to 22, your sheshin is fully developed. It's totally mature and fully powerful. And that's why the guy is holding up the hook. Okay, remember? His right hand has the hook of watchfulness, right? Remember, we had the name for it was down the very first thing. Number three down at the beginning was identifying his hook as his capacity to catch himself losing it in his meditation. Okay, and now up in 22, that hook is, he's got the hook up in the air. It means my sheshin is, now I got real sheshin, finally. I can really catch my mind doing anything, okay, at any time. Okay. So we would call Sheshin the impetus for those two levels. You see, level 5 and level 6, the impetus for them or the power. Remember we had 6 powers? Which one are we on? God knows. Sheshin is the power there. Let's go backwards and see. Before that, we had Dhamma for the previous two, which was bringing the mind back. Before that, we had Sampa, which was considering your Lama's instructions. And before that, we had Tupa, which was hearing your Lama's instructions. So how many? We got 4 powers now. We have hearing your Lama's instructions, which is how we got to meditation level number 1. We have considering your Lama's instructions, which is how we got to meditation level number 2. We have being fully able to bring the mind back to its object, which was characterized levels 3 and 4. And now we have a fully developed capacity to catch ourselves making boo-boos in meditation, which characterizes levels 5 and 6. Okay? So we have 4 powers out of 6 are taken care of. Okay? And then we're ready to go to Level 7 is going to be up here at 24. Okay? And there's a bit of a story about level 7. So we're not going to do it tonight because you're already late for dinner. Okay? So we'll start on that tomorrow morning. We'll get on to level 7. And we'll see what's happening between 6 and 7. Okay. If you have a... Did we get tubes? Can we get tubes? Yeah, it's really bad karma to abuse a poster. So we'll try to get tubes by tomorrow afternoon or something. And last thing I'd like to say is that... All right. Okay. It's like rain on a tin roof or something. Please be in the mode of teaching this, okay? Please listen with the idea that I'm going to teach this, okay? That's what I really, really want to see. I want to see this big proliferation of this meditation poster teaching. It's fantastic. There's nothing like it, you know? It's a really huge contribution you can make to the world, you know? You can get yoga almost anywhere now. You go to Shanghai and there's already 3 yoga studios on the block, you know? Even in Shanghai, I was in Taipei. I gave a talk at the first yoga studio in Taipei 3 or 4 years ago. Now there's a yoga studio on every block, and the kids at that studio are all on Sri Patabi Joyce's series 2 and ripping it. And I made the mistake of going in there to take a class. And these are the people I turned on to yoga like 4 years ago. And it was a shame. I was ashamed, you know, because they're like ripping it, you know. Like Chinese people have a discipline. So anyway, I'd like to see that happen with the poster. No, I'd like to walk into a yoga. You can get yoga anywhere, and it's pretty good anywhere. But meditation is just, what do you call it? It's like, all it's bogus. And somebody says, you know, calm your mind and think about nothing. And, you know, like really bogus stuff. There's no, what do you call it, authentic tradition of meditation which has been spread. The yoga poses are authentic. Almost any studio in the world, the poses are authentic, which is just some kind of good karma that we have. But the meditation is bizarre, you know. So I would really love to see you be at the core of a ground zero and then see this correct and very helpful teachings on meditation, very ancient teachings, that they just become part of every yoga studio. You know, 10, 15 years from now, they just take it for granted. They don't even know where it came from, which is the best way to do a good deed. You're just transparent, you know. They don't remember where it came from, but all the studios, you know, they're like meditation level 7 class tonight, you know, and they check you before you come in. I would like to see that. So you guys got to do it, okay? You guys got to learn it right. And as you go through the next 4 or 5 days, you go through it with the idea that I got to get this down right, because I got to pass it on. Don't be the schmuck in 2,500 years that passes it on wrong, okay? Who makes a mistake, okay? After all those years, you know, you at Friendly Pines Camp, you know. You screwed up level 6. You know what I mean? Okay. That's not very friendly. All right.